Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was the story of the day at nursery school for 4-year-old Jane. This was the first time she'd ever heard the story, so she listened carefully as the teacher told the story of the sweet young girl who was fed a poisoned apple by an old witch. The predictable result, she fell into a deep sleep and would never wake up unless she received a kiss from the wonderful Prince Charming. Jane couldn't wait to get home and tell the story to her mother. At home, Jane said, "Mother, let me tell you this story. You'll never believe it." She began to describe what had happened to Snow White, and when she got to the end, she said, "And Mother, Prince Charming kissed her back to life, and guess what happened?" The mother responded, "Well, honey, they lived happily ever after. The little girl shook her head and replied, "No, they didn't. They got married." Envelope pushing, that's what I'm all about. I think a lot of people have the idea that relationships, whether you're speaking of marriage, whether you're talking about primary relationships within a family or extended relationships of family, friendships, work relationships, etc., etc., and on it goes, the relationships are always subject to the kind of ebb and flow that takes place in life in a general way, and that's simply not the way God intended it. God intended that there would be satisfaction, purpose, and peace within relationships, but it only comes as a result of commitment. So what I want to share with you today is something that can help us to focus attention in a manner that I think enables us to hold the family together when the whole world is falling apart. And the principles come from someone that might seem an unlikely source. You're familiar with the book of Ruth and the story of Ruth. Maybe you're familiar with some of the verses that kind of stand out and that have become favorites of ours through the years in various situations. Well, let me direct your attention to the book of Ruth, and as you're doing so, let me encourage you to consider this from the perspective of whatever relationship is uppermost in your life today. If it's marriage, then that needs to be the focus. If it's children and parents, that needs to be the focus. If it is a relationship beyond that, in a friendship or a work relationship or school, etc., then you think of it in those terms. But ultimately, understand this. Every relationship that you have in life, regardless of the nature of that relationship or the closeness of it, every relationship is going to be a reflection of your relationship with God. If your relationship with God is secure and if it is stable, then it is going to impact the other relationships that you have in the same way. If it is not, if your relationship with God is in rebellion and insecure, then you're going to see the same fallout in every other area of relationship. So what we learn from the book of Ruth really has a whole lot less to do with the very nature of relationships, whether it's marriage or otherwise. It has a lot more to do with our relationship to God first and the impact that has on everything else. It is that truth that can help us to hold the family, our own families, our church family together, even while the whole world is falling apart. Many have become cynical about traditional marriage, and in their book that advocates open marriage, Nina and George O'Neill say this: "The traditional closed marriage is a form of bondage for both husband and wife, and they list 6 psychological commitments involved in a traditional marriage: possession or ownership of the mate, denial of the self, maintenance of the couple front, rigid role behavior, absolute fidelity, and total exclusivity." Now remember, these are all bad things they're listing. They warn: "Subtly, insidiously, often without you even knowing it, the clauses of the closed marriage contract foreclose upon your freedom and your individuality, making you a slave of your marriage." Commentary like that leads me to ask, why did they get married? And yet they did. Fortunately, theirs is not the final word on building marriages or lasting relationships of any type. The book of Ruth mentions several options that an individual can choose to take when a relationship is strained by the realities of life. A woman named Orpah, the sister-in-law of Ruth, face the same challenges, the same trials, the same losses, the same difficulties that Ruth and Naomi did. Orpah decided to leave, to go back to familiar territory, to go back to familiar relationships. It doesn't mean that she didn't love Ruth and she didn't love Naomi and she didn't feel a commitment to the family. She just didn't feel like that was where she wanted to be. She was given permission and even encouragement by Naomi to do that. And so she went back home. Naomi, on the other hand, didn't really have anywhere to go. And even though she would return to her own people because she's been living in Moab, a distant land, a land of foreign gods and foreign people, she's going to go back home now that her husband, that her sons are dead. She's going to return to them, even though she has nothing to go back to, really. And she has become bitter. In fact, the time will come, she will even say when she returns to Bethlehem, don't call me Naomi anymore, call me Mara, which means bitterness. Oh, the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. So she had turned to bitterness. She had become very difficult to deal with and very despondent and depressed over all the losses that she encountered. And certainly, not to minimize that, she had suffered great loss. And her heart had been torn apart more than once. But there's a third response. And that's what we see in Ruth. Ruth gives us that clear response that can help us to understand the best way for us to deal with these circumstances. Listen to these verses beginning in chapter 1 of Ruth with verse 9. It says, "The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." And then she kissed them and lifted up their voices, and they wept. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that you may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have husbands. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband and this night should have sons, would you wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. It is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. And the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full. The Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" A very difficult set of circumstances, one filled with emotion, and yet one that, while we have just a few verses, is played out over many, many days, perhaps weeks of time, as they make this journey, a long journey, from Moab back to Bethlehem. And upon their entry there, it says the whole community is stirred, and people know that they're there. But there is something that is broken in Naomi, but there is something that remains hopeful and faithful in Ruth. So we look at Ruth as the example of the way in which we conduct relationships, the way in which we can build families, the way that the church family can be drawn together and can hold together, even if everything around us is falling apart. Notice several things about Ruth and the decision that she made as she clung to Naomi and she continued to follow the course that God had set before her. She pictured for us responsible living. In verses 9 and 10, and then again in verse 14, we see responsible living on the part. She was a role model, literally. When presented with the opportunity to walk away from the relationship, she desired to stay. No doubt she loved her mother-in-law, but to Ruth, more was involved. She regarded this as a covenant relationship. And interestingly enough, we find some of the same words that we see in the book of Genesis. In Genesis, in chapter 2, verse 24, You'll find there where the familiar passage where it says that that you will leave father and mother and cleave unto your wife. The time comes for leaving and cleaving. There's a shift from the family relationship to a different kind of family relationship. There is a change that takes place in these circumstances. And that's what was taking place there as it relates to husband and wife. We see the same terms used with Ruth. She pictures responsible living for us, but she does so through this example that we see. When a father, or it says, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. The word leave appears in this passage in Ruth. Ruth says, do not urge me to leave you. And then it says that she clung to her, and it's the same word that we have for cleave, or holding fast to her. Two things then that we discover about this responsible living is the idea that she refused to leave. I think a lot of relationships fall apart because people are too eager to, well, they told me to go. You know, and we pass it off as if we have no personal responsibility in the matter at all. Or they told me to get out. And again, we see this thing just sort of fall apart because there's this lack of commitment. But here we see that she had this commitment. Do not urge me to leave you. And she refused to leave. So there was a commitment there, depth and purpose, a commitment that was sound and strong. It is a commitment that we see too often set aside in the lives of people today. The idea that she was cleaving to her is the idea of holding fast, and it carries with it the notion of commitment. It was a commitment, obviously not in a marriage relationship, but a commitment that had come as the result of that marriage relationship. This high level of commitment was the characteristic of Ruth that should spill over into every area of relationship that you and I know. I talk to the couples that are getting married over and over again about commitment being the highest goal of the marriage relationship, the highest purpose. If you're going to go with love, which a lot of people do, many people define that with emotions. And emotions are going to rise and fall. But commitment is what you know, and it's what you've decided to do regardless of how you feel or regardless of your emotional response. Commitment is what we see in Jesus Christ when he was arrested and when he was tortured. Commitment is what we see in Jesus when he hung from the cross. Commitment is what we see on the part of the Father when Jesus was raised from the dead. It is commitment that God calls us to when he says that we are to forsake all in order to follow him. That if we want to live, we must be willing to die. All of these kinds of things take commitment. And the only way that we can ever hope to be the people God has called us to be is through commitment. So we see that Ruth pictured for us responsible living that was founded upon a sure and certain foundation of commitment. Secondly, she pledged her commitment without reservation. Again, verses 16 and 17, perhaps the most beautiful verses of Scripture in all the Bible on this subject. Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. I think that this pledge of commitment without reservation is something that the beauty of the literature is something that lifts us up and yet also sometimes causes us to forget what was involved. I mean, you have to remember that when Ruth made this statement, when she made this commitment, that it was a costly commitment on her part. It was going to cost her dearly. She had to sacrifice a great deal in order to stay in this relationship. She gave up her future when she said, "Do not urge me to leave you." She was willing to sacrifice her freedom from the responsibility of caring for Naomi. When Ruth's husband died, she was probably not more than 25 years old, and yet she remained committed to her mother-in-law to help her through this time. She had to sacrifice and give up her familiarity. She said, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge." She was willing to sacrifice her national identity, her homeland of Moab, in order to return with her to a land that would have been filled with strange customs unfamiliar to her. She sacrificed her family and friends when she said, "Your people shall be my people." She was willing to give up all of her close relationships and to leave them behind, even her own mother, that we knew was still living at the time, in order to fulfill that commitment that she had made. It was costly. Her faith. She said, "Your God shall be my God." Many believe that this is the conversion experience of Ruth. You see, you have to understand, Ruth was raised in a culture in Moab. The Moabites were worshipers of a god known as Chemosh. And it was a ruthless and an angry god that they served with violent practices. And it was all that she had ever known about God until she met Naomi, until she married Naomi's son. It was in this relationship she learned of the one true God of love and grace and mercy, the God of righteousness and holiness. And it was a God that she embraced. And she, when she came to know the one true God, I believe that this factored into much of the commitment and her willingness to suffer the loss in order to follow Naomi and to be faithful to God's leadership in her life. This was her conversion. This was the testimony of her faith. This was the point where everything changed. She gave up what she had known in order to embrace what God had set before her. Indeed, this was a costly decision that had long-term effects. One college man walked into a photography studio with a framed picture of his girlfriend. He wanted to have the picture duplicated. It involved removing the picture from the frame, and in doing this, the studio owner noticed the inscription on the back of the photograph. It's beautiful. Listen to it. "My dearest Tom, I love you with all my heart. I love you more and more each day. I will love you forever and ever. I am yours for eternity." It was signed Diane, but there was a P.S. "If we ever break up, I want this picture back." You see, you can't make this stuff up, you know? Real life is always the best illustration. It was a long-term commitment. It was a costly commitment, but it was a long-term commitment. Ruth's statement, "Where you die, I will die," that was a "till death do us part" kind of statement. She was making a commitment of her life. It implied faithfulness and hard work and the kind of glue that holds a relationship together even through the most difficult times. But it was also a sacred commitment. She said, "May the Lord do so to me. And even more, if anything but death would separate you from me." She didn't just make this vow to Naomi. She made this vow before God. We still do this at weddings. We still do this, believing that God is the one who sanctions the home in all of our primary relationships. By invoking the name Jehovah, she made her pledge of commitment complete. She made a physical, emotional, spiritual vow without reservation in order to honor the Lord. But third, she proved her commitment. In verses 18 through 21, we see some of the things that took place. Every year, thousands of couples pledged their love and devotion to each other only to break that promise later. Every year, we see repeatedly the breakup of the home that takes place as children abandon parents and vice versa. We see the kind of breakups that occur within friendships that have been in place for many, many years over silly things and things that don't count. And we see the damage that can occur in a church family when relationships are damaged. I believe that everything that God does in this world, He does through relationships. He doesn't have to. He could do them in other ways, and He could break into history at any moment that He wants and accomplish whatever He wants. And yet, in His infinite wisdom, higher than our ways, greater than anything we can imagine, God has chosen to reveal Himself through Jesus Christ and to bring us into relationship with Him through Jesus Christ. Relationships are the basis and foundation for which God does everything. Everything either begins as a result of a relationship or it creates a relationship as a result of what He does. But one way or another, a relationship's going to occur. You cannot pray with a person, even a person that you've never met, that you don't know, and you may never see again. You cannot pray with that person in a moment of crisis or in a time when they are committing their lives to Jesus or as they go through some great joyful moment that needs to be shared. You can't spend time with someone at that level and not create a bond. It's a relationship. God does everything through relationships. And Ruth proved her commitment to this relationship. She did it with convincing words. When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more in verse 18. She stopped arguing with Ruth. She did it with convincing words. Ruth's vow pulsated with deep passion and meaning. Her words didn't ring hollow. Further, based upon her past example, Naomi had no reason to question Ruth. Her words were supported by a life of commitment and dedication, a life of devotion and strength. But we see in verses 19 through 22 that Ruth followed through. I read that last section, which actually is kind of a bummer after the first part. You read verses 16 and 17, even verse 18, and it lifts you up, and you see the glory of this commitment that she's made. But then when you read verses 19 through 21, you see the depressing side of things as Naomi, even though she's returned back to familiar home, is very, very despondent. In the midst of that, though, I read it because she said, "I've come home empty." At that point, Naomi didn't know what God had blessed her with in Ruth. She said, "I've returned with nothing. The Lord has dealt bitterly with me." It was as if Ruth didn't even exist in the things that she said. And yet you'll notice that it did not deter Ruth in any way. She proved her commitment with convincing words, but she proved her commitment with convincing works as well. She followed through with her vow. She left Moab with Naomi. She came to Bethlehem. Naomi didn't appreciate it, but Ruth's commitment was not dependent on Naomi's acceptance of it. It was one that she had made to the Lord, and she was one that would stand no matter what. What kind of commitment can keep us together in this way? What kind of commitments can hold families together, church families together, relationships and friendships? What kind of commitment is God calling us to? Well, certainly an example that is higher than that we see at the world today. Our world presents commitment as something that is dependent on what others do or don't do, and it is always subject to change. Covenants and contracts mean nothing anymore. It's no more a commitment on our part that we see in the world today than it is on the part of the other. But Christians should be different. There should be a difference in our marriages. There should be a difference in our homes. There should be a difference in our relationships, our friendships, and our work environment. There should be a difference at school, and there should be a difference every day. Whether you're on the ball field or whether you are on the river or whether you are here, there should be a difference. And that difference flows out of the relationship that we have with the Lord that changes, alters, and enhances every other relationship. It's this kind of commitment that enables us to hold together, even if everything around us is falling apart. Dr. Richard Selzer is a surgeon. He wrote of an encounter that he had following a surgical procedure he performed on a young woman. Listen to his words. "I stand by the bed where a young woman lies, her face post-operative, her mouth twisted in palsy, almost clownish. A tiny twig of the facial nerve, the one to the muscles of her mouth, has been severed. She will be thus from now on. The surgeon has followed with religious fervor the curve of her flesh, I promise you that. Nevertheless, to remove the tumor in her cheek, I had to cut that little nerve." Her young husband is in the room. He stands on the opposite side of the bed, and together they seem to swell in the evening lamplight, isolated from me, private. "Who are they?" I ask myself. "He and this wry mouth I have made, who gaze at each other and touch each other so generously, greedily." The young woman speaks. "Will my mouth always be like this?" she asks. "Yes," I say, "it will. It is because the nerve was cut." She nods and is silent. But the young man smiles. "I like it," he says. "It's kind of cute." All at once I know who is. I understand. I lower my gaze. One is not bold in an encounter with God. Unmindful, he bends to kiss her crooked mouth. And so close, I can see how he twists his own lips to accommodate hers, to show her that their kiss still works. Life is full of challenges and difficult circumstances. One cannot control the actions of another or the circumstance that surrounds. He or she can make the commitment to hold together those relationships that God has given us, even if the whole world is falling apart.
Thank you so much for joining us for our podcast. Remember, you can go to our website, www.tbcsullivan.com, and there you can find other podcasts and other information about the church as well. If you need to contact us, you can send us an email to tbc@tbcsullivan.com.